goddess Brie is tied to poetry, we'll begin with a very appropriate poem by none other than, you guessed it, William Butler Yeats, whereas he was known in the Golden Dawn as Demon, is what they called him. In his letters to his unrequited love, well, somewhat requited, that's a story for another time, Maud Gonne, she would write to him as Demon. They would use their first initial name of the motto, and his was Demon est Deus inversus, God is the inverse of the devil. It's not daemon, not the same Greek word or Latin word for spirit. He meant demon as in the devil, though he's a poet, so if there is a hidden entendre or three or four within that possible, you can bet he had it in mind. Let us begin to honor the goddess Bridget this week as we head towards Imbolc with a poem by our frater demon, the host of the air. O'Driscoll drove with a song, the wild duck and the drake, from the tall and the tufted reeds of the drear Heart Lake. And he saw how the reeds grew dark at the coming of night tide, and dreamed of the long dim hair of Bridget, his bride. He heard while he sang and dreamed a piper piping away, and never was piping so sad, and never was piping so gay. And he saw young men and young girls who danced on a level place, and Bridget his bride among them with a sad and a gay face. The dancers crowded about him, and many a sweet thing said, and a young man brought him red wine, and a young girl white bread. But Bridget drew him by the sleeve, away from the merry bands, to old men playing at cards, with a twinkling of ancient hands. The bread and the wine had a doom, for these were the host of the air. He sat and played in a dream of her long dim hair. He played with the merry old men, and thought not of evil chance, until one bore Bridget his bride away from the merry dance. He bore her away in his arms, the handsomest young man there, and his neck and his breast and his arms were drowned in her long dim hair. O'Driscoll scattered the cards, and out of his dream awoke. Old men and young girls were gone like a drifting smoke. But he heard high up in the air a piper piping away, and never was piping so sad, and never was piping so gay. It's one of my favorite poems by the great W.B. Yeats. So welcome to this exploration of the Celtic mysteries of the goddess Brigid. Of course, some of you may know, ideally, things would have gone different until COVID happened, and my Celtic Mysteries project would have had legs in 2020. But I had to delay it, as sometimes things must be delayed. And so we're going to slowly build back up to doing the Celtic Mystery initiations in person. But at this point, it's gone so long, I don't think it makes much sense to engage with any half measures. And so we'll aim to do those in Ireland when we can. And that's the way that will be. The goddess Bridget, or Brie, famously, and not unlike many gods and goddesses before her, decided one morning, probably after a long night of fairy revelry, such as we just heard about with the host of the air by the Yeats poem, to become a Christian saint. Or at least that's how I like to sometimes imagine these gods becoming saints, that they just see people having fun and say, let's join in with them and become one of their saints. It's a very optimistic view of what likely happened at times. Today, a week before Imbolc, on February 1st, February 2nd being Candlemas, but some would still treat it as Imbolc in a sense, if you know what I mean, because often these Irish festivals are not purely just the day themselves, but the entire month. For example, the last god we worked with, I can't remember if it was Angus or Lou, but Lunasa, August 1st, it represents the entire month, or some would say the 15th of July to the 15th of August, because it's a harvest festival, and the modern Irish language name for Lunasa, or for August, is Lunasa. And if you ever buy an Irish calendar or go to Ireland, you'll see it doesn't say August, it says Lunasa, and so it is. Traditionally, Imbolc on February 1st begins the month called Mina Fela Bridge, the month of the Festival of Brí. And Bridget, like the other gods and goddesses of the Tuatha Dé Danann, came to Ireland from, of course, across the sea. Some people may wonder, why do all the gods of Ireland come across the sea? Well, it's the only way to get there. And not even the Romans managed that. So, you must be a daring sort of person to do it. Risk the Irish Sea. Now, most likely her arrival was in the 1st century AD, when members of the eponymous Briganti tribe, which dominated central England, settled in southeastern Ireland. Briganti, in fact, may have been the name of the Gaulish and British goddess which Julius Caesar encountered and wrote about as corresponding to Minerva, the patron of crafts and arts. Despite us having very little historical data, of course, of the Irish gods and their origins, we know Bridget's name comes from the root brig, which means high or exalted. So she was called on the continent Briga. Now, it is very possible, due to Brig's slight confusion with the goddess Dana or Danu by medieval scribes, that Bridget may have once been a term applied to all Irish goddesses as a representation of their exaltation, of how high they were. So you could say of this or that goddess, she was Brigid or Brí. So this is a theory. But of course, as with most terms applied to gods, they sometimes become gods themselves or emanated from that god. This is a very common thing we see in the study of the generation of gods, which we have a fancy $5 word for. We call it theogony. A clue lies in the topography of Ireland and the other Celtic lands of the British Isles and continental Europe. Many hills and high places throughout are named Brí, something, something, something. I've traveled and spent many times on them myself, but never did actually occur to me that there was a connection to the goddess Bridget whenever I was camping on Brí whatever. Or even many rivers, actually, in Ireland and in other Celtic countries, Gaul, parts of Spain, Isle of Man, and of course Brittany in France, in the Breton culture, have many rivers that once were called Briga or Briginti. Finally, we have many wells of St. Bridget, which still can be found in Ireland today, such as in counties Roscommon, Clare, and Galway. So Imbolc today is celebrated by pagans, and probably at least a few Christians, people in Ireland especially, who have very flexible interpretations of their Catholic faith. Many still consider Irish pagan gods to be part of their lives, land, and religion. Often, even today, you will hear people in the west of Ireland refer to the Virgin Mary as a goddess, calling her the Virgin Goddess Mary, and going so far as to see nothing wrong with even worshipping Mary as a goddess, an act, of course, which would be considered very sinful by the Catholic Church. I'm not sure if they would require a confession for that. I'm not sure if that would be a mortal sin or a venial sin, but you can go ask a Catholic and find out. Ask the priest, what is wrong with worshipping the goddess Mary? Do I need to just repent in my heart and take the Eucharist, or is it mortal sin that requires a confessional? So while many pagans debate which of the spellings is more correct or authentic when it comes to the festival of Imbolc or Imbolc, and whether it's spelled with a G or a C, you might be pleased to learn that neither, in fact, is correct. Which means, of course, that both spellings are equally correct in their wrongness or confusion over time. In the mythology of Bridget, she had two oxen, Fea and Favan, after whom are named two plains in the counties of Tipperary and Carlow. Also, she had Torque Tria, was Bridget's third beast, the king of the swine, and this is a mythical pig, not just your average ordinary pig. And the three of these animals, they would cry out whenever there was plundering and rapine and theft in the land of Ireland. they would act as this sort of wail or lament or warning system, leading to Brigid the goddess being assumed to be a protector of animals and livestock and that sort of thing. So Brigid was clearly seen in a protective role, even in her pre-Christian state. And this, again, as we'll see, most of these qualities did carry on with her. And some of the most prominent qualities we associate with Brigid today are the ones that are least testified to historically, such as her association with fire. Her festival was considered to be the first day of spring, and it still is in Ireland today. The Friday before the 1st of February is now a national holiday as of 2023. So better late than never, right? The first Monday of February is off, unless February 1st falls on a Friday, and then the Irish get the Friday off. Either way, the wearing of St. Brigid crosses is common, along with the usual famous Irish merriment. But the name Imbolc, which means birth, literally parturition, so the process of being born. I'm not an expert on childbearing, but a specific part of that is what the Irish word actually denoted. It seems it was a scribal error. So the scribe was confusing it with the word Imbolc. And you can see here Imbolc versus Imbolc. And the word Imbolc is pronounced Imbolc, with the O being silent or subservient to the I with an accent. The accent on the I is a fada, which means long in Irish, and it means you pronounce that letter long. So Imbolc. Imbolc, Imbolc. Very similar, and their meanings are very similar, so that explains even more of the confusion. Imbolc means lactation. You and I might think these terms are both applicable to the goddess, especially today when the tradition of this goddess in many ways includes the medieval texts such as the Liber Gabalin Aaron, which subsumes folk traditions not written prior to the Middle Ages, as well as the cult of St. Brigid, which developed out of the goddess worship in the 5th century and 6th century AD. So what is the Liber Gabala? By the time that Christian scribes in the Middle Ages were composing the core mythological texts, which we should probably best refer to as pseudo-history, such as the Liber Gabala na hÉireann, or the Book of Invasions of Ireland, the cult of St. Brigid had already been popular for about 500 years, so there is truly no way for us to know what traditions of the goddess were included with the saint and which emerged from the Christianized form of the pagan goddess. Certainly, in my experience of living and traveling in Western Ireland as a professional bard and piper, the people there seem to not even comprehend any questions about the difference of gods and saints. To them, they generally and are obviously the same beings. Now, of course, even those who don't believe in gods or saints at all would still never let their children play on or near any of the marked and signed fairy paths and trails that wind all throughout, especially the western parts of Ireland. Not without supervision, at least. Which, as magicians, witches, and wizards, we would of course consider a testament to the undeniable reality of the spirits and the spirit realm, if not the she and the Chernanog itself. Chernanog being the land of the young, and it's often conflated with the realm under the hills, she being the name of that realm as well as a name for fairies, but as a name for little hills and the realm under the hills, which again, you can enter the land of the young, which is an island off to the west, even by going under the hills. Sometimes these stories are very flexible and fluid, and that's part of the Irish mythological and cultural ethos in a very deep and profound way. If you haven't been there and experienced and witnessed that mentality that is still alive and well for yourself, I hope you get to someday. Now, in the 9th century, Cormac's glossary or narrative, it's just a dictionary of terms that says that Brigid had two sisters also named Brigid, and that she was a daughter of Daigda, of the Daigda, or Daya, depending on what time in space you're pronouncing it. Daigda was probably ancient, was probably Old Irish, but it might have just been Dai or D, and it could have actually just developed out of the Latin Deus. It's quite possible. But it's also completely possible it had a different root, an actual Old Irish root. So she was the daughter of the Dida, the father god who had the cauldron of plenty that never ran out of food. And she both inspired and protected poets, according to Cormac's glossary. Poets were bards and storytellers, and most often peripatetic, so they traveled the lands and brought news and gossip and kept the ancient stories and tales alive, while also composing new poems and songs for kings who might show them favor. As such, you can imagine how important Bridget would have been to both serve the dual task of protecting these sacred pilgrims from brigands and natural disasters, while also helping them to find food as well, due to her connection to animals and especially lactation. You know, if you're hungry on the road, chances are a prayer to Bridget and knocking on a farmer's door might get you a nice cup of milk and maybe something to eat. So she had these various qualities identified in the medieval Irish texts and pseudo-histories, which mostly began around the 11th century. And here you have an example, actually. I've put in the actual image from the glossary itself from the 9th century. So this is a actual image of the eight manuscript from the 800s, where many words are defined, Irish words and old Irish words. She also became the wife of the King Bres and the mother of Rouen. Yeah, the text of interest here is a really fascinating thing to read because it actually fuses in the 800s in 9th century style Latin and Old Irish. So it says things, I'll give you just an example of what it says: Brigit I ban fila ingen ingen I in dagda. So that is mostly Old Irish. Bridget, the woman, ban fila ingen ingen, I'm not sure what that is of the dagda. Isha inshin brigid bane exa ibandia no adratus fili erin roar. Agus baron a frignum idio eum Deum iocant poetarum, quia sorores erant Brigit be legis col. So there you have a bunch of Latin there, and then it jumps back into Old Irish with a little seven, a marking seven, which you'll still see in pubs above in Ireland in signs. You'll see it says like, music and fun, and instead of an and, it'll have a seven. And this is a trait of Old Irish orthography to represent the Irish word agus. So agus Bridget be gebna ingena in dagda de quorum nominibus penne omnes Hibernensis Dea Brigit Waka Batur Cormac's Narrative, Gloss 9th Century. So really interesting fusion of the Irish and the Latin there in this old beautifully written text, which you can go read online to your heart's content. In the medieval text, Lavernagavala Nairn, literally the Book of Invasions, Brigid is married to Bres, who is half Fomorian and half Tuatha Dé Danann. When King Nua loses his arm in battle and can no longer rule, he is replaced by Bres. Her son, by him, Ruin, is treacherously slain, causing Bri to become the first ever to lament the dead by wailing and shrieking. So there you have a nice etiology in the story of where wailing and shrieking to lament the dead came from. So any of you who are fans of the Irish Banshee can confidently trace that story and mythological origin of the Banshee wail to none other than our goddess of fire, Bri. So that's quite interesting if you ask me. Moving over to the saint who became very quickly one of the most popular saints. I wonder why and how that happened. From a popular goddess to a popular saint. From around the year 600 AD, we have the first references to Saint Bridget, whose hagiography has her as living from the year 439 to 523 AD. So Saint Bri, or Brige, as the story goes, was from Leinster and founded a famous convent in Kildare, or Kildara Ascuaga, or in Irish. However, in 650, only 100 years after Saint Bri lived, the cleric Tomtenach wrote her hagiography for the Church of Kildare. They commissioned him to write the story of this saint's life, of course. What is notable in this story by this cleric is that there is really no actual information about the woman who had supposedly lived just 100 years earlier. And if that makes you somewhat suspicious, it should. This further indicates to us as scholars that the closest we may likely get to a real Saint Bridget who actually lived was the echo of stories of the goddess, likely conflated with a holy woman in the region of Leinster who may have been prominent to the people there, and indeed may have helped form the convent out of what was once the shrine on this hilltop dedicated to the cult of the goddess Bridget. And so, no records show a real person founding the convent. We know the peoples who were in that area and that there was likely some holy woman who did start an actual convent, but again, no details remain of her 100 and something years later when the hagiography of Saint Bridget was written. So, this clearly shows that this is a classic example of the goddess being borrowed or taken almost wholesale into Christian culture and theology, specifically, of course, Catholic, and then with miracles and a history written down, a hagiography, as we call it, histories of saints, written down to justify her canonization as a saint. And this is where it gets interesting, of course, because this is where we find more traces of the pre-Christian goddess. But before we look at that, one Christian scholar named Cogitosis, who documented all these miracles for her and many others, proposed February 1st was the date of Saint Bridget's death. But of course, this is almost certainly not the case, given the significance of February 1st to the goddess as beginning of spring and Imelg, the lactation festival, I guess. Saint Bridget maintained the pagan qualities of the goddess Brí as patron of farm animals, crops, and fertility. Now, some scholars have considered that Bridget was the title of the head druidess of the shrine that was converted into a Christian convent, thus subsuming the cult of the goddess in the exact way most of us have learned that these religio-cultural changes usually occur. So we have here a prime example of that. Furthermore, when we look at the miracles of Saint Bridget, we can clearly see the fusion of classic Christian miracles or Christian miracles with the traditional powers of the goddess of spring. So some of these miracles, as you can see on the slide. Oh yeah, she's the Mary of the Irish. She was so popular, is still to this day referred to often as the Mary of the Irish. So that tells you a lot right there. But the miracles, water into ale, straight out of the New Testament. Sight to the blind, again, out of the New Testament. Taming of wild animals, some say that refers to some of the infant Jesus stories which kicked around in the Middle Ages. You could always make a few bucks if you had the ability to write and some paper and wrote down some stories about what Jesus did as a young child. Or you could create some grimoire for summoning spirits. All of those things sold very well. There was lots of ways you could make money if you were literate and had the luck to be able to afford some kinds of parchment or paper. Now, multiplying food and the control of weather. So these are her main miracles that got her canonization by the Catholic Church. Given the total usurpation of the Irish goddess by Saint Bridget, we will never be able to be sure what magical practices were preserved from earlier pagan origin and which developed out of the Christian cult of the saint. The church made Bridget famous far and wide, and along with her, certain superstitions and practices, which today, of course, we would consider magic. The first of these is the cross of Bridget, which you can see pictured here as the large green cross made of straw or rushes, and it was placed in the home for protection and for health for the coming year. This is really the perfect talisman to consecrate on February 1st if you're doing any rituals to the goddess or saint. These were often made using straw or rushes to tie together small sticks, so I would recommend making one yourself if you were to do that. But they also sell some very beautiful jewelry versions of this that you can get by, so do what you wish. They were placed also where animals were kept to protect them in case you have a chicken coop or a barn. Now the mantle of Bridget, the Bratavrige, right there below the Crossvrige. The mantle of Bridget is a cloth you put outside your home on the eve of the feast from sunset to sunrise. So sunset, January 31st, that's a special day to me, till sunrise on February 1st. And the idea is that Bridget will then touch and bless that cloth you've put outside of your home. If you live in an apartment, I don't know where you're going to put this. Maybe she can make it into your hallway. Maybe you could put it on your balcony and she could move up on the wind, fly up on the wind as a fairy, because she is a fairy, that is for sure. The mantle would then be touched and imbued with curative properties, and it was often placed in Ireland on the heads of animals for healing, or on the heads of animals to help them with lactation and not to be rejected by their mother even. Bridget's belt is a tradition only in Galway, apparently, and that's where I spent most of my time there, and I've never seen this, of course, but I'm sure it exists somewhere in some of the villages where they still do this. And a belt is woven of hay or rushes for people to, and animals to pass through for protection on that day. And there's many other stories that the Christian monks came up with to demonstrate the qualities of Bridget with taming animals. Like a king's clever fox isn't behaving right, or and then it dies, and there's a threat, and so Bridget finds a wild fox, which she blesses or ensorcels, however you look at it, to become tame and then go and perform for the king all the tricks the king's old fox did, but even better. And after the king is quelled, the fox then reverts to being a wild one and runs off into the wilderness. These stories are often quite endearing and even cute, I find. Some of the saints' stories, I think, have a lot of the goddess in them that otherwise you might not see at first glance. But when you look for it, you're like, okay, I could see how this is a tale of a god, of a pagan god, that then has been fused into a Christian story. And the way you do that mainly is by looking at where the story resembles other Christian stories and remove those parts. And what you have left is, at the very least, something more ethnically Celtic or Irish, certainly. And of course, you know, for modern versions of the Irish fairy tales, Lady Gregory and W.B. Yeats did all the collecting of those stories that they could before the old people died out, as they'd say, and Ireland's memory changed with the switching to English and the dominance of English during those times. We could do a additional part on the W.B. Yeats of it all, which looks at the use of Bridget in the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, but I think I'm going to leave that for another time, since this is just information I've published in my book called The Celtic Mysteries of W.B. Yeats, which you can get on Amazon for a few bucks. But I can also make this chapter available to anyone who wants it. And it's just the continuation of Yeats's project. Yeats and Mathers, what they tried to do with their order of Celtic mysteries was adapt the Irish gods and pantheon to a Kabbalistic magical framework in which they could do rituals following the system that the Golden Dawn practiced. They originally wanted the Celtic gods to be used instead of Egyptian ones, but they couldn't figure out how to represent them, since unlike the Egyptian pantheon, there's no visual representations of what the gods and goddesses of Ireland would look like. So rather than going through the lengthy work of scrying and meditating and communing with those gods to derive symbols and images of them, they went with the much more versatile Egyptian god forms, which are zoomorphic anyway, and so bring with them this whole animalistic quality, this very primitive energy, which was of course very useful to them magically in their theurgy with god forms and connecting with the archetypes represented by animals to most human beings. We all look at animals and see something more than just that animal. We see a symbol of flight or strength or stealth or cunning or slothfulness. We even have an animal for sloth, don't we? So, yeah, rather, we'll take the next 15-20 minutes to chat about these things, since there's a whole bunch of you here. I'm sure there's lots we can discuss, and we'll leave the Kabbalistic Yeats Celtic Mysteries stuff for another time, since this is really the new information. This other information I have, I've been presenting it since 1999, so it's a kind of old hat, and I'm sure some of you have already heard much about it, so we'll leave it there. Thank you all for being here, and let's have a chat about all of this.
Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good, all 100% free.
What if I had three jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live, must start and file in app by 2/18.